This is the Wired.co.uk podcast coming to you live from Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. I'm Nate Langston, and joining me for a look at the biggest stories coming out of this year's mobile tech extravaganza is our one and only Miss Katie Collins.
Hello!
Now, we have been at Mobile World Congress all week, and we've got a hands-on with some of the biggest product announcements, including Samsung's new Galaxy phone and wearables, Sony's Z2 Superphone, I've decided that's what we're calling it because it's massive, right down to Firefox's £15 smartphone. We've seen the next generation of 4G working in a live demo, streaming multiple Ultra HD video streams simultaneously, and we found out that that technology is coming to tablets and London this year. Now, over the course of the show, we'll be joined by a few fellow experts and industry insiders. So if you want a half-hour answer to the question, what consumer tech should I care about over the next 6 months, you're about to get one. Now, we built ourselves a little temporary studio here at Mobile World Congress, haven't we, Katie?
Yes, I'm very much enjoying it.
Yeah, it's temporary, but that is why the sound quality is a little different for this show. But we really had so much to talk about on today's show that we didn't want to confine it to just a 5 minute section on the main program. So you're getting double podcast action this week. We're going to start by talking about Barcelona, I think. Katie, how are you feeling after 6 days of being here? I'm exhausted.
I'm exhausted, but also feeling very positive and upbeat.
Yeah, have you mobiled? Have you worlded? Have you congressed?
I have done all three of those things.
Excellent.
And I'm still standing.
Yes.
Well, I'm sitting right now.
Well, yeah, we've been here for a while, and we're going to start, I think, by just getting the most obvious thing out of the way, which is that Samsung's Galaxy S5 was revealed this week, and we spent an afternoon playing with it, and everyone seems to think, yeah, not bad, but not quite groundbreaking. It's very, very similar to the last model. It's certainly, if you've felt or seen the S4, you've pretty much seen or felt the S5. But the internals have been updated, so we're just going to have a quick run through those. It is now a quad-core 2.5 gigahertz Snapdragon 801 processor. It's got 2 gig of RAM. It records Ultra HD video. That's 4K. That's the successor to HD, Full HD that we've been shooting on phones for a while now. It also has a heart rate sensor. That's interesting, isn't it?
Mm.
And it's water resistant, so you can do all of this stuff. Well, maybe not the heart rate sensor. We haven't tested that underwater for a period of time, at least. Now, I was pretty... I don't say I was impressed by the S5.
Mm.
It was basically everything we expected it to be, which was an iteration. But it does seem to have refined a lot of what came before it.
Very much so. And, you know, if you're thinking of, if what you wanted was a brand new, you know, big splashy launch, then I think actually the bigger difference was back in September with the Note 3. But this is, you know, the Galaxy S4 was a great phone anyway. And these little tweaks, I think, are going to make a massive difference to those that really want to push the boundaries of what's capable on a high-end phone.
Definitely. There are a lot of features that other phones have had for a while. I mean, Sony has been waterproofing its phones for quite some time. And the S5 is not the first device to shoot 4K. I mean, actually, the Galaxy Note 3 got 4K support.
Yeah.
That we saw back at IFA.
Exactly, yeah. I think it was, in terms of, not just in terms of the hardware either, in terms of the software and the interesting things that you could do with it. I think that was probably the more interesting device.
Yeah.
But the
fitness side of things is something that Samsung has really been pushing with this. So there's a new app that ships on the S5 called S Health 3, which we're just going to call Shelf for the purpose of this podcast. And Shelf is an interesting app because it tries to aggregate a lot of the data that is being captured either by the phone's internal sensors. So it has a pedometer, it knows the distance you've traveled, it knows your heart rate now as well. It can work out your calories burnt by knowing your height and weight and things like that, and combining that with the distance that you've traveled, the steps you've taken, to try and give you an estimation of how much you have burnt off in a day. But obviously it also logs heart rate if you press your finger to this little device on the back. And we've done a video on the website on wired.co.uk if you want to see this in action. And the app pulls all that data together and logs it over the course of time. So it's not just about looking at how much you did on a given day. You can look at this data historically and you can see, have you had a lazy week? Are you generally doing more? Has your heart rate started going down over the course of 12 months? Mm. That's data we've not necessarily had such ready access to over the last, well, ever, really, certainly in terms of smartphones without wearing devices.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first time that we've seen this kind of functionality not on a wearable in an actual phone. And I think the heart rate thing is particularly interesting, just because, you know, you don't see that a lot of places, and actually being able to monitor that over time yourself is something that people have never been able to do before. Whereas things like the pedometer and stuff, I think, you know, maybe that is the task for a wearable, because you're not necessarily, I wear a jawbone up and I don't even think about it, you know, it goes everywhere with me and...
But doesn't a phone? Isn't that the idea?
But I don't think it does. It doesn't, you know, it won't always... Those times that you get up during the day and, you know, maybe move around, you're not necessarily always carrying it.
Well, enter then the other thing that Samsung announced at Mobile World Congress, and that's called the Gear Fit. Now, we knew Samsung was doing two new Galaxy Gear devices. That's the smartwatch, if you like. The Gear Fit is not really a smartwatch. Mm. The Gear Fit is much more like what you're describing, the Jawbone Up or the Fitbit or the Nike Fuel Band. In fact, it looks mostly like kind of a fat Nike Fuel Band.
Yeah.
And it has a curved AMOLED screen on it that's almost 2 inches across.
Mm.
And what this does is tracks all of those things that we were just talking about, the steps, the calories and what have you, but without the phone being there.
Mm.
With the phone, it becomes much smarter, because it then means that that data is being passed from the device directly to the app.
Mm.
But it also means if you're having a workout, your phone's in your pocket, you're running, you can see those incoming calls, those emails on your wrist. You can reject those, or you can do a quick reply by having some pre-written text, if you like, to respond if you cancel calls.
Yeah, and to be honest, the kind of wearables that Sony and Samsung have previously released just have not really appealed to me. They've just not been, you know, discreet enough.
Samsung certainly not. I mean, they are.
Yeah.
Even the new Gears, they're big. They're a jack of all trades, or they try to be.
Yeah. Whereas I, you know, like the fitness focus, because I already, like I say, I already wear something for fitness, but just having that extra functionality, and, you know, I am a big fan of Samsung's AMOLED screens as well, and, you know,
sorry to interrupt, but the screen is worth pointing out. It is really quite nice on this device. It is curved. It's a touch screen. You swipe across it. It's a really nice experience. The interface is very simple, very basic. You know, three apps, three icons, app icons in full color in AMOLED. So it's very vibrant, these colors that sort of glide over the top of the device, and you sort of swipe your finger over your wrist to move through the menus and tap each device. And they're very clearly laid out. It's heart rate, it's steps, it's clock, you know, and for the rest of the time, it's a very attractive little watch. There's even certain tweaks, like because it's a full color screen, it's quite high resolution for its size. When you've paired it to your phone, you can take any photo from your camera's library, and the S5 has a cropping tool built into the gallery.
Oh, fantastic.
That means you can crop the very, very panoramic-like section you want, and that becomes the background on the Fit, so it's very personalised.
Ooh, I quite like that.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So
you can wear your heart on your wrist.
Well, for another opinion on Samsung's big news, I caught up with Matt Warman, technology journalist and head of technology at The Telegraph. Quite literally caught up with him down a hotel corridor, in fact, to ask him whether he thought the S5 was worth all the attention it was getting.
The Galaxy S5 was always going to be the product that got the most attention, so an enormous venue. But there was also the sort of real risk that it's got huge expectations around it. It's essentially the flagship Android phone. It's going to sell 50 million at least. So huge expectations. You've got to pull out some real impressive features. Now, what they did was, on the one hand, lots of impressive things. It's waterproof. It's got cameras that you can focus afterwards, really high network speeds, all that stuff. But those are incremental improvements. And I think a combination of marketing and the way Samsung genuinely sees technology going is to make their mobile phone phone simply a gateway to a whole load of other devices. So in the immediate future, then that's the Fit, their fitness band, which has got a curved OLED screen, technologically very impressive, but also the Galaxy Gear smartwatch, which is now just called the Gear smartwatch because it doesn't run Android. But little details like that don't change the fact that they are seriously investing in a wearable future where the phone is simply a way of getting access to, say, the data that comes from the heart rate monitor on your smartwatch. But it's also, if you look slightly longer term, the phone is the interface through which you see your TV, your fridge, if you really want to go mad. They launched an Android-powered washing machine. This is just an interface. It's a remote control for everything.
I think Matt's absolutely right. And the S5, and by extension the Galaxy S line, is kind of a hub for everything Samsung does. The question is, do we want everything Samsung does? Let us know, podcast@wired.co.uk. Now, Nokia got a lot of attention at Mobile World Congress this year by revealing its Nokia X line of Android phones. These are low-end devices aimed at the world's quote-unquote growth markets. These are areas of the world where smartphones are only really just beginning to become viable options and where feature phones dominate because of their low price point. It's a big theme, this, tackling growth markets, and low-end smartphones were a very hot topic. You know,
Careful, hot.
I know, that topic is, my goodness, very hot at Mobile World Congress. Everyone seems interested in these devices because finally, in addition to being affordable, some of them are actually quite good. Nokia X is one of those, I think. It runs a custom build of Android that Nokia has made look a lot like Windows Phone, and it's causing a bit of buzz as a result. Now, Katie, you went hands-on with the Nokia X.
I did.
For the first write-up we did. What was your takeaway point? Because this is the first time Nokia's done an Android phone.
Yes. To be honest, I didn't really love it. And I speak as a big fan of the Lumia range, actually. But it felt like to hold it was like a more boxy Lumia. It was like a cross between an Asher and a Lumia, and it was you know, it didn't feel very nice.
But you know what? It is a cross between the Asher and the Lumia,
it
sits in between those two markets. The Asher is that low end that's not really a smartphone but has some smart features.
Yeah.
And the Lumia is the high end, you know, relatively speaking, Lumia. And it, I think by intention, it's a cross between the two. I disagree with you. I think I actually really liked the physical design of it. I think it's cute. They're attractive. And although I wasn't that impressed with the web browser, I think it was a little bit sluggish and non-responsive.
Yeah.
The actual interface on here, I mean, it looks nothing like Android. It's very slick. It's very straightforward and easy to use. I don't want to say it's a parent phone, but that is a thing. There are a lot of phones out there that people who don't necessarily want to be tech support for their relatives give them these phones that are easy to use. And I think, although it's not going to launch here for quite some time, we don't expect, that's exactly what this is. And that makes it super suitable for these markets.
Well, I don't know. You see, I think I didn't enjoy particularly using the interface, and I found it really, you know, juddery, and in a way that I haven't seen on a phone now for several years. You know, that was a problem at the beginning with Android, when Android was running on phones with really low processors, and it was just, you know, it was just not responsive enough. And this is the first time I've seen it in a while. And, you know, there are other phones that do that job, that, you know, the parent phone that you were talking about. I mean, Huawei's new phone, the Ascend G6 that they've just bought out, is mid-range. And they've done something which I think is quite interesting. I'm not sure why nobody's thought to do this before, but they've got different... So you can have two different styles of skin on the phone. You can have the standard one, which is an Android skin as you would recognize it, and then a simple skin, which is a little bit almost like the Windows Metro interface with, like, you know, the tiles, not obviously not spinning around and moving. I'm sure Microsoft would have something to say about that. But and it's really simple, you know, just the options. It's like using a more sophisticated feature phone, but with, you know, a web browser and email and stuff as well. And it's an introduction. It's like a stepping stone. And that you've got both options on there. So once you become comfortable with the new features, you can then, you know, switch over to the standard interface and get deeper into it. And I think, you know, I don't know if it's necessary to have this.
But you know what? I think although everything you've said is right and is correct, this is a phone that is being launched into markets where those phones don't necessarily exist. People are using millions of feature phones, and a lot of those are Nokias. And I think there's something to be said for Nokia to launch such an affordable smartphone. So it's going to be about 89 euros, so that's just over £70 outright for this phone, that is launching into a market where people are already familiar with the brand.
That's true.
They're considering that step into smartphones. Now the prices are affordable. Mm-hmm. And they're going to look at this and think, okay, it's Nokia. It's got a good industrial design. I know we don't necessarily agree on that, but I think that objectively speaking, it's designed well for what it's being, what's going to be done with it. It's quite rugged and customizable. And the interface is not as convoluted as Android, yet it has all the perks, or a lot of the perks that comes with Android, like the app support, even though it's not the version of Android you would see on something like the Samsung or the Sony or an HTC or a Huawei. It's the open source Android project that's behind it. So, but it does mean that it runs, you know, the vast majority of Android apps. There's not very much that needs to be done to make those run on these phones, if anything at all, other than just uploading them to whatever store Nokia wants to is going to be running, or by downloading one of the other storefronts like Yandex, which is very popular in Russia. It has about 100,000 apps in it, I think. It allows those people to feel comfortable about stepping into the smartphone world. And the specs are quite good. It's 1 GHz dual core CPU, a 4-inch screen that in the hand looks pretty decent. You know, it's not, you know, it's not 443 pixels per inch that we're seeing on some of the bigger smartphones, but it's still very crisp and vibrant. 4 GB of onboard storage, it's expandable, 0.5 GB of RAM, a camera, Wi-Fi, dual SIM support. You know, it's everything that these markets need, I think, to get to step into these, into the smartphone world, and for a very decent price. So the question is whether betting on Android for this sort of a product is a good move instead of adapting the company's existing Asher line, which is already in these territories, you know, whether that's a good idea. So to help form an answer to that, I spoke to Natasha Lomas here at Mobile World Congress, who's a reporter for TechCrunch.
At this point for Nokia, I mean, it's a sensible strategy. They've got a gap in their portfolio, the price portfolio. The very, very budget Nokias, the Ashers, and even lower down, obviously aren't full smartphones, and they're very basic versus Android, and they're sort of priced at a competitive point with Android. Then you go up to the full Lumia Windows Phone smartphones, and they obviously are competitive Android on some level, not on apps, of course, but they're a bit more expensive. So there's this hole in their portfolio, and this is where the Android sort of forking Android comes in. So they get to fill that gap, which is good for them. Finally, they've got something that is price competitive with Android at very budget sort of points. At this point, they're down to about $120 with it. They obviously want to push that lower still. So it's price competitive. It's competitive in the sense that people don't have to compromise on apps, because they can get access to a good 75% is what Android is what Nokia says will work. So they don't get all Android apps, but they get a good portion.
That is a good portion for sure, I'd say 75%. And I think Natasha's right. Android out of the gate, even at the low end, has a wealth of apps that make it very attractive, don't you think?
Oh yeah, I mean, obviously, like, the ecosystem's just so well developed now, but don't you think it's a bit strange for Nokia to be getting into bed with Android, given that it's just been bought by Microsoft, which is a huge competitor to Google?
It's a good point. I asked Natasha that exact question, specifically whether Microsoft will keep Nokia X around once it owns Nokia, once the deal's completed, or will it, you know, give it the old back of the shed with both barrels treatment?
I think, you know, they'd be a bit crazy to kill it off if it got decent traction, because it is potentially a very good strategy. At the end of the day, the platform isn't important, it's the services are important. So if this Nokia X platform ends up being a way to get people using Microsoft services, Microsoft should be very happy about that, because this is a huge and growing market. Smartphones are growing fastest in these emerging markets. It could be really great for them. It's whether they have the confidence to, you know, build on, you know, with kind of using Google technology rather than fully their own.
Well, don't miss our report and hands-on photos and coverage of Nokia X by going to wired.co.uk/MWC2014. And let us know what you think to Nokia X and what Nokia is doing with this product line on podcast@wired.co.uk. Finally, we wanted to talk about one other major topic that came up at Mobile World Congress this year. Now, we mentioned earlier that these growth markets are hugely attractive propositions for mobile companies, but it's not just the phone manufacturers taking interest. Mozilla, which makes the Firefox web browser, announced not only plans to develop a $25, £15 smartphone, but showed off a working prototype to the show and to us to prove what it was devising was actually physically doable. Now, the company's worked with a Chinese chip maker to develop a CPU chipset so affordable that the entire phone can be bought by a customer for about $25. And I think it's worth highlighting that this phone, despite its price and ultra budget concept, has a processor that runs at 1 GHz. That's more than the first iPhone. It has a 3.5 inch color touchscreen. That's the same as the first iPhones. And it offers web browsing, email, widescreen video playback. You probably see where I'm going here. And we've got to the point now where that technology that changed the phone industry entirely back in 2007 is now available in a device that costs less than some apps on iOS. Now, this is a pretty amazing, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think I spent a week out in Rwanda earlier. Well, it was actually last year now, kind of looking at how tech's changing things over there. And I think what we've got to remember is that when it comes down to it, the phone is a tool. You know, it can be an object of desire and, you know, all the rest of it over here. But ultimately, what it provides is access to all sorts of services and, you know, potentially education and
banking in, I mean, in M-Pesa, yeah, exactly. In Africa is huge.
Yeah. And as long as you have that basic functionality, you know, that processor that's fast enough to work to that, you know, that it can provide you with the ability to run these apps in a usable way, and you've got a touchscreen that's about responsive enough, you know, that right there is such a valuable tool, and we forget that, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, and I think it goes back a little bit to something that Matt was saying in his comment earlier on in the show, which is that a lot of these devices now are kind of gateways to other things, or they're a way of interacting with a wider ecosystem.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time, you know, that ecosystem is basically, it's going to sound a bit naff, but it's basically life. You know, these phones have become so central that, you know, people don't have credit cards in a lot of the places that these are being used. You know, they're doing things, they're billing stuff through the mobile operator. They're doing banking by SMS. These phones are absolutely crucial.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a focus on moving towards a knowledge-based, service-based economy. And Africa particularly missed out on industrialization and kind of that's, and its economy is generally across the board suffered as a result. But what it's seeing now is that if it has access to these tools, then it can leapfrog all of that and really throw itself forward into, you know, being able to be a competitive player in the global market.
Definitely. And we've seen a few examples of ways that other companies are innovating along similar thought processes, if you like. I think the Akash tablet from Datawind, which is, I think, £25 Android-based tablets adopted by educational institutions, or OLPC. In fact, you wrote about this, the solar-powered OLPC tablet that's solar-powered, being used out in various parts of Africa, again, in education.
And in Latin America as well. And, you know, it's these kind of things that we probably take for granted now. We don't necessarily appreciate the power that we hold in our hands every day. And with the price of chips coming down and the price of actually making a budget tablet kind of or a budget smartphone dropping all the time, there is absolutely no reason why, you know, it's people should be prevented from accessing the same kind of services and knowledge that we have access to now.
Well, I met up with Jonathan Nightingale, who's the VP in charge of Firefox, and I asked him to explain what considerations Mozilla had to make in order to get this smartphone down to such a low price point.
Part of it is just knowing that there's a market appetite there, and that market appetite doesn't need a 6-inch screen, right? That we can And when you hold the device, you'll see, right? It's a 3.5-inch screen. And that's okay, because you're talking to people who, if they have any cellular device at all, it's a feature phone. So bringing them a web-powered, apps-enabled, marketplace, Firefox phone for that kind of price point is a place where they can negotiate around things like, does it have a 3.5-inch screen? But another big one, honestly, is that it just takes less memory, right? That we can, there's phones being announced here with multiple gigabytes of RAM. That's huge and expensive, and it's got to be high performance, right? And that's what you need if you want to attack the high end. But the Spreadtrum device out there has got 256 of ROM for the OS and 128 meg of RAM for the smartphone. That's unheard of, right? We're pushing, you see Google pushing very hard to get Android down to 256.
Well, that device that Jonathan was talking about is the concept phone that was out working at Mobile World Congress that I got to have a play around with on site. And I've written a feature about the device, and it's really been getting quite a lot of attention on Wired.co.uk. So I really would encourage anyone interested in this topic to head to the site and look it up. I've also got some photos of the device if you want to see the interface and what the thing physically looks like. Now, Jonathan and I actually had such an interesting talk about how and why Mozilla is doing what it's doing with this device and Firefox OS in general, given that it's a non-profit organization, that I'm going to put out the full interview that I did with him that was just taken from in our podcast feed. So look out for that and give it a listen if you're keen to hear the background on the product and what Mozilla's trying to do with it. Well, that's going to do the show for today. We have a regular edition of the Wired.co.uk podcast that will be out in your podcast feed very, very soon. I will be back in the studio next week, and Katie and I will both be back in the office, hopefully slightly less exhausted from the... I think I've had about 12 hours sleep in 4 days, or three nights.
I don't really want to think about it. I'm planning a big catch-up session at some point.
It's essential. But to see everything that we've been putting out from Mobile World Congress, videos of the S5 and the band, the Gear Fit, hands-on with the Sony, the report about Firefox OS and everything else that we've seen at Mobile World Congress, wired.co.uk/MWC2014. And thanks again, of course, to Natasha and to Matt and to Jonathan for giving their opinions and feedback on the show.